Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo Podcast. This is your weekly dose of all things Nintendo. My name is Gemma, and joining me this week, I have my two good friends. I have Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
Hey, it's good to be back, rested up and ready to go.
Yeah, and welcome back, Trev.
Yeah, I am happy to be here. It's been especially long for me, so too long, really.
Yeah, it feels like ages since we've had you on. We did have the last couple of weeks off because I've been abroad, so we've had a bit of a vacation, I suppose you could say. It was a vacation for me, actually. I'm sure you guys still did all your things and where you are.
Not a vacation for us.
No. But yes, I've just been back from Japan, so we'll talk about my time over there and my time, especially at Super Nintendo World, which was amazing. We've also got quite a few news items to go through from the last couple of weeks, plus we will talk about the games we're playing, of course. So, yeah, I was so excited to go to Japan. We'll start with that. And I really wanted to compare, I suppose, Kirk, your experience at Super Nintendo World in LA to mine in Japan, in Osaka. So I have to say, I knew in theory what to expect because you've been there and you've obviously written up a nice piece about it and photos and we've talked about it. I've read online, I've seen pictures, etc. But going there, it just blew my mind. It was just amazing. Like, and I have to say, if you're thinking of going to Japan, which we're just talking before the show, Japan is very heavy, a very popular destination for tourists right now. So, and it's possible that a lot of people are thinking of going to Japan. If you do go, and if you do go to Super Nintendo World, you have to get the wristband, right, Kirk? You can't do it.
Oh, yeah. Almost everything you do there is wristband required.
Yes, exactly. Excuse me. And it just makes, the way I sort of explain it is it's kind of like the whole park is interactive. It's like being in a game almost, in a Mario game, really, because you're using the band to you know, collect coins. Well, essentially the goal is to collect the most coins, but you hit boxes to collect coins. You do little challenges to collect coins. Like there's one where you have to hit music boxes or you have to, defeat enemies. Like there's a Koopa shell that goes back and forth and you have to time your press of this button so that the Koopa shell goes up the pipe and hits the power block. It's like literally being in a Mario game. It's so, so much fun. When I first walked into this world, I had the biggest, goofiest smile on my face for the longest time.
Yeah, well, that's one of the best parts, right? I mean, when you first go in, you've seen the pictures of it, but when you go in and you're so small compared to all the walls and everything just going up all around you, it really is a very fun moment when you come out that opening into the world.
Yeah, it is. I'm getting goosebumps even just thinking about it because you do go through that big pipe. Like there's a big green pipe you walk through just like Mario and it has these kind of cool lights on the sides. So it looks like you're warping and you come out and then you come through Peach's castle, which is just brilliant. You know, the paintings on the walls that look like they're from Mario 64. There's a section, at least in the Japan one, there's a section on the side, where Peach comes out and stands for part of the day and you can have your photo taken with her. There was a huge line for that, actually. And I've got a bit of a Japanese, maybe related travel bug, but hopefully my voice holds out. Oh. Yeah. It was.
Hey, Jim, I have a quick question.
Yeah,
you can rest your voice for a second. You mentioned the paintings and Peach's castle. Did they have to put up like a velvet rope to block them so people didn't try to jump in?
No, they didn't. That would have been cool, though. They did have kind of a shimmering, like a, what do you call it? You know, when you're looking from one angle, it's one picture, and then you go to a different angle, it's a different picture. You know, it changes between two pictures.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember that term.
Yeah, but it does
like
that.
The old baseball cards I used to get as a kid.
Yeah, like those not holographic, is it? Something like that, though, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so it does
like
that.
Maybe.
That's a cool term.
Well, I'm going to look it up while you keep talking.
So the one thing, and I don't know about LA, I think it's the same in LA, but in Osaka, you buy a ticket to Universal Studios and then you have to book a time to go to Super Nintendo World. And that was the only frustrating part I found because you can't book a time until you use your ticket to go into Universal Studios, if that makes sense. So you have to go in, you know, like at 9 a.m. or whatever, you go in, then you've got the app on your phone and you have to like find a time. Okay, I want to go to Super Nintendo World. So I couldn't get in until 3 p.m. So there was a lot of kind of just I mean, you don't have to wait around. There's a whole Universal Park to explore and do on the side with like Minions rides and all sorts. There's Jurassic Park stuff. There's Jaws, etc. So there's heaps to do there as well. But I just wanted to get to Nintendo. So moving closer and closer as it got to closer to 3 o'clock, and it's like, okay, it's 2:30. And we actually decided to try to get in a little bit early, and they just let us in. They didn't say anything. I wasn't sure how efficient or, you know, specific with the times they'd be, but I'm like, oh, we're a little early. And they're like, yeah, go in. I'm like, cool, okay. So that was good. And then, you know, they close at 7, so you only get so much time there. And it was really, really, really busy. Like, there are lots of people here. And once you get your 3 o'clock time or whatever time you get, you don't have to leave by a certain time. So you can stay there all day, you know, once you get in. So, yeah, it's just a lot of people. But most of the crowds move pretty quickly in terms of you have to line up for things like the Bowser Jr. fight. Once you collect, so there's coins to collect, but there's also these little things. Like I said, you have to hit the Koopa Shell or whatever. You get a key. Collecting 3 keys then lets you fight Bowser Jr. And that was awesome. Did you do that, Kirk? Did they have that in LA?
And if they did, I have no memory of it at all. So I'm going to say they don't, but I could be wrong.
Could be wrong, but we could find out, but that's okay. So what you do is, this is even more like an interactive game. You go through this little maze kind of thing, and then you go into this room and Bowser Jr. kind of taunts you on a screen. Then you walk into this room and it's like there's about 10 people at a time that go through. So it's only like a 5 or 10 minute waiting. It's pretty good. It's not like the other rides that take like 2 hours. The Mario Kart ride, I'll get to that. But the Bowser Jr. one, you're standing all in a line kind of with a couple of meters between you and you're facing this giant wall, like a giant screen in front of you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's funny. I don't remember Bowser Jr., but I remember the screen and there were like shadows and you had to jump and knock things away. Yeah.
So you see your shadow on the screen and you can jump, you know, in real life and your shadow jumps in front of you pretty high, actually. And you hit power-ups that come your way and you get, you know, you can get firepower, for example. I got a star power, which is really cool. And you can throw fireballs at the enemies. There's like Koopa, para Koopas and piranha plants and obviously Bowser Jr.'s there as well. So you have to defeat him and collect coins is the goal. And I think I got like 20, which was pretty good apparently, but someone did beat me. I think they got 21, but I was the second best in my group. So I was happy with me. Yeah. there's a lot to do. It's like, honestly, you could spend, they say you only need like 4 or 5 hours there, maybe because it's so busy, but I could have spent days there, honestly. It's just... there's a lot to do. So the two rides that they have, and I know they have Mario Kart, the ride in LA, but do they also have the Yoshi ride?
No, they did Yoshi... not.
Oh, okay.
I think they're going to add that when they build in Orlando.
Oh, okay.
I think I read, but that's not in LA at the moment.
Oh, okay. Sadly, I didn't get to ride that because there was a line. It was only about 70 minutes, but I decided to go with the Mario Kart line because I felt like I needed to do the Mario Kart challenge. So that one had about, I think it was around 100 minutes when I went to it. I kept checking all day. You know, as you do, you check the times, like, oh, it'll go down at some point, right? But it was like 120 minutes, 110.
You couldn't
minutes.
Flash your pure Nintendo badge and move to the front?
I wish I'd thought of that. No,
don't
I didn't
they
bring
know who you are?
It.
Yeah, that worked for me.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
Of course, it was a media event and there were no crowds, but
yeah that would have been awesome. It was worth the wait, and the Mario Kart one is pretty cool. They have lots of stuff to look at while you're waiting. You know, there's all these trophies in the wall, there's big Bowser statues, there's heaps of Mario Kart memorabilia. Like, it's pretty cool. And then in fact, as you get closer, you go through Bowser's, you're in Bowser's castle, right? But you go through Bowser's like library, and there's like all this stuff. He's got this little notepad where he's writing a list, like a to-do list. And there's like this huge model train track of Mushroom Kingdom or something. Like, it's pretty awesome. They've gone all out. Like, it's pretty cool. You can't even interact with it. It's just there on the side and you can see it. There's like a little Bob-omb factory that you walk through, a little Mecha Koopa factory. Like, you can see how they make the Bob-ombs. Yeah, so there's lots to look at on the way through, which helps. And then, of course, the Mario Kart ride, which is like, what would you call it? Is it IR? Like, it's not virtual reality. It's like that. IR
augmented
stuff, isn't it? AR. Not IR, what's IR? So you've got like enemies in front of you on your little visor, and you can the thing I remember you saying this too, Kirk, you have to point your head at the enemies and then hit the fire button on your control. It's not like you can direct the control, you have to look at them. That was
and not just with your eyes. You have to turn your whole head in order to pull things into view. or
yeah, Dame. Yeah, it was so fun though. Trev, you have to try this. It is just so, so fun. You're in a team of four, like you have four people in your little car, and you, if you all turn at the same time, because it gives you like little arrows to turn to tell you when to turn. If you all turn at the same time, you get little bonuses, and the goal is to get 100 coins, I think, to beat Bowser, because you're like Team Mario, and then there's Team Bowser you have to beat. And of course, there's things like there's stickers to collect across the whole park, as in virtual stickers in your little wristband app. So, you know, the Mario Kart ride, for example, if you hit all the Koopalings, you get a sticker for that. There's just all these little bonus things. It's just like a Mario game. You know how in Mario you have to find all these little nooks and crannies and discover all the hidden gems? It's exactly like that. There's just stuff everywhere. There's like giant binoculars you have to look through to find Rosalina. There's like little Pikmins hiding around, even though that's not really Mario, but you get the idea.
And they're like they're little they're some kind of indicator on a wall where you'll be walking somewhere and you just see something on a wall and you hold your wristband up to it and then the wall kind of lights up with a hidden thing and then you get points for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Oh, it's so cool. And I was hoping to give Donkey Kong Country World or whatever it's called a try, but it wasn't opened yet. So I think it was meant to open this month, but they've delayed it. So I didn't get to try that, unfortunately, but I did make use of the rest of the park. Apart from the Yoshi ride, I think I did pretty much everything. We did go back twice. We had 2 days at Universal. So I did manage to go back twice and finish off some of the things, including Mario Kart. So yeah, it was just amazing. It was just so, 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 so fun. And just based on the number of people there, it seems like it's a really popular attraction or park to me. I don't know how it fares in America. I assume it's pretty popular as well. But, yeah, it was always crowded. And this was like a random weekday. It wasn't even like summer holidays. It was just like a Tuesday. So it was like, yeah. Can I imagine what it's like on a, you know, Saturday or something like that? But, yeah, it's really worth going. If you're going to Japan, to Osaka, please check it out. It's so, so worth it. The other cool thing I did in Japan was – and I didn't know this or I forgot this, but
wait. Before we leave Nintendo World, did you eat and did you try the mushroom soup?
I didn't get to do that. There was a huge line also for the mushroom, the Toad Cafe, whatever it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it though. I saw the sign. I'm like, I really want to try this. There was some other little cafe too, some Yoshi thing. Like they had Yoshi cookies or some other little foods around that I saw. So there's quite a few little eateries in the Osaka one at least, which is cool, but I really wanted to go to the Toad Cafe. It looked really small inside, like it didn't have a lot of tables, so
if it's like the one that we had, they had a lot of seats crammed in. I mean, comfortably, you weren't in there, but it was pretty tight. Since I was at a media event, they were just able to get us in and out quickly, but I read afterwards about how hard it is to get in there, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, if I had more time,
too
I
was bad there they for don't like, do like a cup of soup or something you can take with you. Toad's cup of soup.
Yeah. Well, in Japan, I don't know about theme parks. It's probably a bit different, but they don't tend to eat on the streets. They tend to not do that. It's a very clean country.
They're
as
more
well.
Polite than we are.
Trash. Yeah. It's so funny because there's no trash, right? It's very clean. And of course, I would have something, some rubbish in my hands. And I'd be like, where do I put it? There's no bins anywhere. And so I'm thinking, why is this country so clean? There are no bins. But everyone's just so polite. They just take their trash home with them. And they deal with it somehow. So it's really, really clean. But yeah, the other cool thing was we were just wandering around Kyoto one day, a different city, obviously, to Osaka, not too far from Osaka. And I saw people walking around with Nintendo bags. And I'm like, is there a Nintendo store in Kyoto? And I looked it up and there was. It just opened this year. I didn't even realize. So, of course, we went there. So I had already planned to go to the one in Tokyo, which last time I was in Japan 5 years ago, I had the same experience where I saw people carrying a Nintendo bag, like a shopping bag. And I'm like, is there a Nintendo store in Tokyo? And it opened. It was opening that day that I was in Tokyo 5 years ago. So
nicely done.
Yeah, no, right. This time it wasn't the grand opening. It opened, I think, in January this year. So it's been open a few months. But still, I'm like, I definitely need to go there. And it was really, really cool. They're both called Tokyo and Kyoto stores. Very similar. Kyoto seemed a bit bigger to me. They're both very busy, though. So again, the popularity seems to be quite up there. I think Nintendo is not going anywhere in terms of popularity in Japan. You can see, it's a Japanese company. Everyone over there seems to just love that brand and that company. The one thing I wanted to tell you, Kirk, is that the Pikmin merchandise they have, because I think I remember you saying you went to the New York store and there wasn't any Pikmin related.
There was very nothing. Easy.
Yes.
And this was right after Pikmin 4 came out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all in Japan.
That's fair.
I was very impressed with the amount of Pikmin stuff. It's just, there's just heaps. So much stuff. I had to be very conservative with what I could buy because otherwise I could spend a lot of money. there's backpacks, there's, you know, pens and pencils, there's, you know, statues, plush toys, anything you can think of, gardening kind of tools as well, like little gloves and packs and seeds and things like that. I bought the little plants that I think you might have seen on Twitter. I bought those little vases, which are really cute, which I wanted to get anyway because I'd seen them online previously, but they're very hard to get here. There's just so much Pikmin stuff. Like Pikmin must be really, really popular in Japan is what I'm thinking. Because it's just, there's just so much stuff you can get. And the store is really, it's nicely laid out. Like it's divided into, there's a Legend of Zelda section. There's a Animal Crossing section. There's a Splatoon section. There's obviously heaps of Mario stuff. Whatever your favorite thing is, it's bound to
Fire Emblem?
Fire Emblem. Ooh, that's a good question. Did I see Fire Emblem stuff?
Might have been one shelf.
I didn't see a lot of Fire Emblem stuff, actually. That's a good point. Maybe I missed it, or maybe it wasn't there. I don't know.
They didn't have much. Well, in New York, they had, I think there were two figures out. They had like a Byleth, not like the Figma ones, but somewhere in between, as far as like price range goes. I can't remember. Maybe Marth and Byleth.
Yeah. I did see, not in a Nintendo shop, but, Akihabara, which is in Tokyo. Excuse me, it's a sort of a city in Tokyo or a region, and it's called Electric City. So it's very much for gamers. It's got heaps of retro stores, heaps of anime stores. It's really, really cool. It's kind of a few blocks of just awesome shops. But this one shop I went to did have, and I even took a photo for you, Kirk, I haven't shown you yet. It's they had this kind of section for Xenoblade Chronicles stuff, which I thought was pretty cool. And especially, and they had a Zelda one right next to it. And it wasn't just like, it was figures and things like that. But they had like soundtracks, like CDs of like the soundtracks of all the games, which I thought was really awesome. I thought it traveled like that, especially for the Zelda stuff. It's got all of the, Breath of the Wild soundtrack. Yeah, it was really, really cool. The stuff you can get there, it's just amazing. You can't get it here. It's just impossible. It's just like, even online, it's very hard to get. So, yeah. I was blown away. And of course, Amiibo will be the last kind of thing I say. But at the Tokyo store, the Nintendo Tokyo store, they had a wall of Amiibo, and I was just like, I just didn't know what to do with myself.
What'd you get? You got at least a dozen based on the pictures I think I saw.
Yeah, I think I did get about 10 in the end. I had to kind of keep myself a little bit restrained. I could have bought so many more. They're not cheap exactly.
Just a little bit restrained.
Yeah, exactly.
Your kids got no souvenirs, but you came home with a dozen Amiibo.
Yes, exactly. And I got some secondhand in Akihabara, which is the Electric City place, because they do have some there. So I found a few secondhand ones, which was cool. They're a bit cheaper. But even Nintendo, the store, they're not that expensive compared to Australia. They're similar price, but just the range they have, you can't get them here. Like King K. Rool from Donkey Kong Country. I've never seen him here. So that was a cool one to get. But yeah, I had to just pick and choose which ones am I going to get. Oh, no, I did get another one later on. I got, it was a Fire Emblem one, was it? No. I did get a Fire Emblem one, though, actually. I don't remember who it was now. But one I had tried to get here when they re-released them. What was it, last year or the year before? And I could not get this one. It might have been Silica, whatever.
Oh, from Shadows of Valentia.
Yeah, she was impossible to get. It just sold out everywhere here. So I just didn't get that one. So I found her and I'm like, yes, I need to get that one. Yep.
I think I ordered her from Japan.
Right. There you go. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
You're going to catch Roger yet, Gemma?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got like 80 something now. So I'm doing pretty well. Wow. I did count them the other day and I've already forgotten, but it was in the 80s. And then I actually forgot I do have another one here on my desk, which I didn't even count. So there's another one there. So yes, the land of Nintendo, it's worth visiting. It's so cool. Mario stuff is just everywhere anyway. Like you can get like Mario chocolates in the convenience stores. there's heaps of Mario and Pokemon stuff around. So it's definitely kind of in the, would you say it's in the zeitgeist? I don't know if that's the appropriate term, but it's kind of there. It's everywhere. And they just, yeah. So that definitely a productive trip to Japan. Yeah. Any other questions before we move on? Because I could talk all day about Japan, of course.
Well, I thought for sure when you were talking about the Pikmin stuff, you were going to mention all the steps you got in the Pikmin app.
Oh, well, I was. I was going to save that for games we're playing, but I could say that now.
Because oh, Pikmin... I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of us.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. It's easy to do now. It does tie in. But yes, Pikmin Bloom, I guess the story with that is I had the game for years here in Australia. And most recently, I haven't played it for a couple of years because my phone must be too old and it won't update the app. So recently I got a new phone, so I reinstalled the app. And when I was in Japan, I was playing it a lot. The cool thing was there are so many people playing it over there. Like everyone's playing it because I see on the screen, you can see it's a bit like Pokemon Go. What is it? It's very much like Pokemon Go. But you can see because in Pikmin Bloom, you have to lay flowers down where you walk, like petals. And so you can see petals everywhere. And you join these little battles that are like mushroom battles. And I had trouble even finding one that wasn't full in Japan, but I found a few. I mean, I even made some friends over there, like virtual Pikmin friends. So I'm getting, over 10,000 steps a day on this on this app. But when I got back to Australia, no one's playing it in my area. Like I'm like, oh, there's mushroom battles happening and no one's fighting them. And then all the flowers around me, which are like Pokestops, like you go and you get nectar from these big giant flowers that are around your area. But they're all not in bloom because no one's blooming them. No one's walking around to make them bloom. So I have to do all the blooming myself. And it's like, oh, this is way more fun in Japan.
It's a blooming outrage, it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see why Miyamoto is so excited by Pikmin Bloom and why I guess, the fans over there are excited by it. It seems to be, like I said, Pikmin's very popular over there. So it makes sense why he's created this game and why it's doing very well. Hopefully it's doing well. It seems like it's doing well. Yeah. But over here, not so much.
You'll have to retire there, Kirk.
Boy. That's a goal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great place. Great country. Nice people. Great food. And obviously everything Nintendo as well. So... there's a lot of good reasons to go there. I just loved it. I loved it so much. So, yeah, you guys got to get on Pikmin Bloom, though. Maybe we can become friends. I don't know if you can help each other from overseas or not, but...
yeah. I'm not going to be able to head over to Australia soon to help bloom the plants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, the term is lenticular. Lenticular.
Oh, okay. For the movement close. Of images. Cool. There you go. Yes. We've learned something new today. Okay.
Excellent. Wait, what was it? What was it referring to again? I already forgot. It was the picture that changes as you move. Like,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
Lenticular. Okay.
Very cool. Put that in a review.
Yeah. I don't know how you can work that in, but I want to see that happen. So
these visuals are almost like lenticular. Like I can't quite figure out what I'm looking at.
I can see that happening. Yeah. Anyway. Well, we'll move on to some news because it's been a couple of weeks since I was away and we've missed a little bit of news. But the first one I wanted to talk about was the Wii U and 3DS online portions of gaming has now disappeared. It's gone offline. They've shut the servers down, right? And I think we've all heard about some clever or stubborn players have been staying online as long as possible. And I wanted to know what you guys thought about this. I think it's kind of funny. I tried to find an update yesterday. I could only find an update from like 2 days ago, but it seems like there's still a handful of people online. Maybe by the time this launches, which will be Monday, maybe there won't be, but there was still a couple. I think the list was, where did I see it? There was like Xenoblade Chronicles X had like four or five people. Mario Maker still had one. Splatoon had one. Pokemon XY, I guess, had one. Mario Kart 7 had two and Mario Kart 8 had one. What do you think? This craziness. Do you think it's
like they can't shut off the lights till everyone leaves?
Yeah.
Is that what we're dealing with here?
I guess so. Yeah. Do you think the servers are still on and they're running them in the background because people are still there?
Well, it's like what fans are finding like workarounds, right? Isn't that it? Like,
I think so. But kind of... You can't like, shut down.
It's not like a homebrew thing, but it's like a, in a similar vein. Like it's a, what's the word I'm looking for?
So they're not just sitting on the
lenticular.
On the games. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Hey, not to get too off topic, Gemma, but I just out of curiosity, because Street Pass still works. Did you take your 3DS?
Oh.
Because that's its own thing, right? That just goes by.
Yeah, I forgot. I forgot to do that. I knew I did. You know, when you have that feeling, I knew I forgot something. That was the thing. That was the thing I forgot. Dang it. And we even talked about that, didn't we, Kirk? That I need to take it. So.
Yeah. Because when I flew to Hong Kong and stopped over in Tokyo, I had my 3DS and didn't realize until I'd gotten back on the plane for the rest of the flight that I had left it in airplane mode and didn't get a single person when I was walking around the airport in Tokyo. Mm,
yeah.
It's like, hold the flight.
I'm happy for whatever fans end up doing to keep 3D or Wii U for that matter. I mean, I'm somebody who still revisits old hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I probably play too much old hardware when I should be, you know, doing Switch reviews, but you know, it does feel like it feels like it was premature, but you know, then again, you think of it like the 3DS launched in what, 2011, Wii U was like a year later. So it's been plenty long, I guess. But at the same time, I mean, you look at like what Xbox has done and you're like, how come Nintendo can't, why are they Johnny come lately with, you know, these services? Why can't they be a trailblazer? They've done that for so many other things. Why is anything related to online the one area where Nintendo, you know, is playing catch up? So I don't know.
I have a theory about that, actually, just with my recent experience in Japan. Online, it's not great. Like, as in, I was trying to book stuff ahead of time to go to Japan, and their websites, this is going to be very generalized, of course, they must have good websites, but the ones that I went to, like, I don't know, the Pokemon Cafe is an example. I was trying to book into the Pokemon Cafe in Tokyo. You have to book a month ahead. The website's just really not user-friendly, and the servers can't seem to handle everyone going online to book at once. They do this weird thing where they, for that particular cafe, you have to, on the 10th of every month, it opens up the following month's bookings. So I was on the 10th of March, I was looking at April's bookings, and I got online and it was just booked out in minutes, but it was like booking, like it was like trying to get into a Taylor Swift concert or something. It was ridiculous, you know. and I had the same experience with the Studio Ghibli Museum. And I had the same experience with, we wanted to see these capybaras, which are these giant guinea pigs or giant, guinea pig type creatures in Japan that you can go to a cafe and see them. Those ones I had to go get up every day, not get up, but I had to be online at 8 a.m. every day to try to book. And it just, the online experience was poor. It just wasn't good. I wonder if that's just a thing. I was very surprised in the months before my trip how poor the online experience is. And I didn't really connect the dots, but I wonder if it's just, you know, they're such a technically advanced country, you would think, you know, Nintendo does really cool stuff with its consoles, etc., gadgets and things like that. They have this whole Akihabara Electric City. They're very into tech, but online, not so much. I don't know. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I think it's just a cultural thing. Like they're more about traditional, maybe, like face-to-face communication.
Could be. Yeah, and it's sort of related, but not really. But thinking of traditional versus, you know, new or modern or virtual, like money, I've never had so much cash in my life. Like, as in, I've never used cash, like, not since I was a kid. Like, today, I just use my card everywhere. I don't even have cash. I never have cash. But in Japan, I needed cash. I just needed to have cash. And they use, like, coins a lot. Like, you just get, you know, 1 cent or 1 yen coins. You know, it just, it was very different. They still use, I noticed the taxi driver, for example, when he picked us up, he had, you know, a GPS. He had his phone with the GPS, etc. But he also had a little clipboard, and he had to tick something on his clipboard. And I'm like, what? I like it. I think it's really cute and cool that they still, like, even I saw a delivery in one of the hotels. I was waiting to check out, and this delivery person came in, and they had another clipboard, and they used a pen, and they were like signing things, like when people come to deliver stuff to me, they have a little electronic device and have to sign with a virtual pen, you know? So I think they have a very, yeah, cultural thing where it's like traditional versus modern. They like to keep, they have a bit of both. It's probably balanced quite well, but it's different to here at least. Yeah.
Hmm. The more you say, the more I want to just, as Trevor said, yeah, retire yeah. and go there.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I'm like, I wanted to ask. I wanted to ask the taxi driver what he was doing, but I didn't. I'm just like, what is this? What's
going on? Did you go to Nagasaki? No, that's where Kirk wants to go.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't. No, I have to go back.
Yeah, there's a story about that behind that that we'll tell sometime, Trevor and I.
Okay. I look forward to hearing that one.
Stay tuned to future episodes.
Yes. Yeah. when we don't have so much to talk about.
Yes, that's it.
When will that be?
Well, in the, you know, we're coming up on the twilight. It's starting to glow over the horizon, right? So there will be fewer games and just tons of speculation on the new system. So we'll work it in then. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for the moment, at least, it seems like, you know, Nintendo's still pushing forward with lots of new games. They had an Indie World Showcase on the 17th of April. So in the last couple of weeks, they had that. There were quite a few games I thought that looked really nice. And some of them we'd heard of before in previous showcases. I think the Little Kitty Big City was actually brought to our attention then as well. But now it has a release date. It's the 9th of May. I thought that one looked really cute. You know, you get to control a cat in kind of a third-person perspective in a city. We'll just talk about a couple in this because there's too many to go through and we don't have time. And it was on the 17th, so it's a couple weeks old now. But Europa was one that caught my attention, and there was a demo out for that one. So I did try that during the week. So Europa, is it the moon of Jupiter? One of Jupiter's moons, I believe, is Europa.
I think the
premise is they've terraformed this moon so that it's habitable by humans. I've only had a very short time with it, but it's very beautiful looking, very Zelda-like, I suppose you could say, sort of shades of Wind Waker in terms of its color. It's very green, but, you know, also Breath of the Wild in terms of its realism, I suppose. It's not like as cartoony as Wind Waker, but yeah, it looks really nice. It seemed to play pretty well so far. I've only dipped in quickly, but that's one to watch out for. It doesn't have a release date just yet, just 2024. Cat Quest 3 was one that caught my eye simply because my son loves the previous Cat Quest games. And there's a demo for that as well, which I haven't had a chance to try yet, but I will. And that one's out on August the 8th. And it's sort of it's an RPG where you're fighting enemies as a cat. You know, you're a knight, kind of a cat knight. You fight dragons and things. It's pretty fun. The previous games were actually pretty fun. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that one kind of goes. Stitch is the next one. And I don't know if you guys have heard of this. It's out now, actually. I don't know if we're reviewing it at all, but it's a puzzle game. And I'd heard of this actually while I was in Japan, just randomly read about it because I thought it was a relaxing game, but it's a relaxing puzzle game. And I thought it was literally you kind of build objects out of fabric, like stitch them together, but in a kind of very easy way. But it's more like you have to stitch them by closing off sections based on numbers, I think. So there's a bit of it's almost a Picross-y kind of feel to it. So that's one to watch out for, I think. It's gotten very good reviews from what I've heard. It's very well received. So that could be...
That was the one that stuck out most on my mind. I wasn't enamored with a lot of the games in this one. Not to say that they're bad, just not my taste. Mm. But that one caught my attention.
Yeah, it just looked really neat, didn't it? I think they interviewed the developers as well. It was a couple. It was a Japanese couple, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I think the wife was doing the design and he was doing the coding or something like that. And they seemed really enthusiastic about it. It seemed really nice. And I think they do daily challenges or something as well. There was some really cool content that they had added to it, so that it stood out to me as well, definitely.
Yeah, the description on the Nintendo site is pretty long for a cheaper puzzle game. Like, there's a lot of like you said, a lot of content, looks like, and like it's gonna try to have an active like community or something.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, looks really cool. hopefully we do get the chance to review it, but if not, I might even just check it out myself because it does look so good. And the last one, which they saved till the very end and one I wanted to talk about, particularly with you, Trev, was SteamWorld Heist 2, which was a huge surprise for me, at least. I don't think this hadn't been announced before, right? This was kind of new information, right?
Yeah, it was a week ago.
I didn't catch when. 17th.
So that's like, 10 days ago at the time of recording. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm super stoked for that. You guys may or may not know, but SteamWorld Heist is actually, if I was to make a list of like my favorite games from like the past, you know, this generation, like the past 10 years or so, that would have to be one of them. I bought the game on 3DS. I bought it on Wii U. I bought all the DLC. I bought a physical version on Switch because I wanted it again. And I just, yeah, it's my favorite, you know, not knocking Dig or, you know, Quest or any of the others, but I love Heist and I'm super excited to see, you know, how they're taking the core gameplay and moving it to the water. Because it was like, it took me watching the trailer. Like I had to wrap my head around it. I'm like, okay, I'm looking out the windows and I'm seeing water and not like stars or, you know, it's different, but it looks like it retains a lot of the stuff that I already liked and that fans already like. So, and I'm glad they're revisiting it because, you know, they've gone in different directions with the SteamWorld games and Heist was due for a follow-up. So I'm super excited. It might be, and I'm just going off, 2 minutes of footage, but it might be my Dark Horse game of the year.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah. It could very well be, honestly. And it's out on the 8th of August, so not too long to go.
It seems long, though, when you're excited to play it.
Because like you said, they do, generally, they seem to vary the genres in these games in the SteamWorld series. Not often. I think they did do a SteamWorld Dig 2. Is that right? There was one sequel they did.
Yeah, it was a great game too.
Yeah. So to revisit SteamWorld Heist, which is that kind of turn-based kind of style, I had it on the 3DS and really enjoyed it. Have you had a chance to play it before, Kirk, the first one?
I've not played, I don't think, any of the SteamWorld games.
Oh, okay. Well, there's something for you to play during the Twilight times, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. Now that's my excuse to revisit Heist because it's like I haven't played it in a while. And it's hard sometimes to justify replaying a game when there's so many new games or, you know, so many review games or this and that. But now I can like legit say, okay, I have a reason now to replay this because it's prepping me for the sequel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's never been a better reason to do that. So we look forward to that in a couple of months time on the 8th of August. So yeah, it was an interesting showcase. It kind of dropped out of nowhere. Like I was traveling at the time. So, I was surprised, but I hadn't really been following a lot online at the time because I was just doing too much walking with Pikmin Bloom. But yeah, it was cool to see some interesting games highlighted by Nintendo. And of course, we've got others to look forward to, like Paper Mario in May and Luigi's Mansion 2 in June. I think it is. It is. So still heaps to look forward to as we welcome this Twilight era.
I should just throw out too, real quick, that the SteamWorld games, especially Heist, because it's an older game, it does go on sale, you know, from time to time. So throw it on your wish list if you haven't played it, or you know, if you played it on 3DS but want to play it on Switch and widescreen or whatever, you know, it might be worth checking out. It's just a really good game. I think I reviewed one version, I can't remember which one, and I probably undersold it because the tell of a good review game is, do I go back and replay it after the review is done? In this case I have a couple times over.
Cool. Yeah, that's definitely the tell of a good game for sure. Yeah, well, another piece of news that came out, I think, while I was overseas was the year, it's been announced by Sega that this year is the year of Shadow the Hedgehog. And I just thought that was interesting because, you know, we don't get many years of characters. I think we had the year of Luigi a while ago, which people seem to liken this to. Shadow the Hedgehog, obviously, we've heard recently he's the character is in the upcoming movie, Sonic Hedgehog 3, as well as, what's the game, Sonic X, we didn't decide how to say this, did we, but Sonic X Shadow, is that what it's called, the game that's coming up? So, and then the other thing was that, you know, Keanu Reeves is voicing Shadow in the movie. That was the other thing that we had.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Which maybe, Trev, as you're a Sonic fan, I don't know a lot about Shadow, to be honest. I know he's been around for 20-odd years, and he's been, I think there was a spin-off game that he's been in, as well as he's featured in Sonic games. I kind of quit Sonic around Sonic 3, so I didn't really get to that.
Oh, maybe wow.
I might have played Sonic and Knuckles, actually. Was that Sonic? Was that after Sonic 3? Anyway.
Yeah, that was like within, it was like the second half of Sonic 3. It was like a few months later. It had the add-on technology where you could pop the cart on top of it. And anyway, that's kind of getting off topic. But Shadow, my enduring memory with Shadow, and you guys will appreciate it at least, but it was a game that was not generally well received by critics, but Nintendo Power gave it an 8 out of 10 and got flack for it. And people are like, oh, Nintendo Power is just pushing, you know, their own, you know, how people are, you know, with, you know, reviews. You like your game too much, they criticize you. You hate a game too much, they criticize you. You can't please everyone. But it was kind of an odd, you know, contrast compared to the other mainstream critics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nintendo Power sort of backpedaled on it, if I remember right. I'll have to look through my old issues. But on a conceptual level, it seemed odd to have, you know, Sonics are like kid games, and then you have this hedgehog, you know, with, you know, wielding guns, slightly coarser language. And I feel like Shadow kind of signaled maybe the point where Sega started really losing its way with Sonic, or at least being a lot more inconsistent with Sonic.
Because
even the games before that, like the adventure games, were fairly popular. They had Sonic Adventure, Adventure 2, Sonic Heroes. Those were more often than not well received. But yeah, I don't know about Shadow or about this year. I mean, because a lot of the stuff they were talking about, you know, like mobile games, that's not really my thing. Legos are, you know, cool enough, but if I haven't gotten the Nintendo ones, am I going to get the Shadow ones? I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. 8 out of 10, Nintendo Power. I mean, most people are giving it like 4 or 5.
Yeah, it really, it stuck out, and it's one of those things that always stuck in my mind. And because every once in a blue moon, I've been in a similar situation. You know, not that I look up reviews prior, but you know, after we post, we compare, right? And I'm like, man, I'm the only one who liked this game, or vice versa. Everyone loved this game but me. And that's my Shadow of the Hedgehog moment.
Yeah. I mean, it got 7 out of 10 from the official Xbox magazine in the UK, and Game Trailers gave it 8.3. But Metacritic is sitting on 51 for the GameCube? Was it that system? GameCube? Plus Xbox and PS2. But yeah, 49, 50, kind of 45 for the PS2 version. So, yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. I have not played that one. But yeah, it is kind of the fact that he's a darker version of Sonic. Like he's a, you know, wielding guns, like you said. He's, what is he, like an anti-hero? He's kind of like
good. Yeah, that's the word I've heard kind of tossed around.
Yeah. So, well, hopefully this year helps elevate his status a little bit, and maybe they'll remake that game and make it better. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm always cool for, I shouldn't say always, but, you know, I like to see older games get touched up for a new audience, assuming they're old enough, and that game is. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, 2005? Is it that one?
That sounds about right, yeah.
20 years.
Yeah, I think it was right around the time I think the DS came out, maybe like within a few months of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, it was just because I think it even made the cover, actually, if I'm remembering right. Wow. Like, I'm like, oh, who is this kind of, you know, gray, black looking hedgehog here? But you know, I want Sega to make a good Sonic game, like the games I grew up with. I mean, that's really, you know, I'm an old man yelling at cloud meme. You know, I like what I like, and I want to relive my childhood. And yeah, I haven't been able to do that since Sonic Mania, which wasn't even Sega per se. It was it was like a fan project that they picked up. So,
did you play the new one, the new Sonic game?
I did a bit, and you know, it's interesting with a lot of the Sonic games. You know, the first hour, it's like, hey, this is pretty good. And then like a week goes by and it dawns on me, hey, I never went back to that game. Like I have fun, but I instantly forget about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know what it is.
They can't recapture the magic that they had in the 90s somehow. Hmm.
I suppose. I mean, I guess, you know, Sonic as a youth, I was associated with, you know, greatness. You know, it was like, there was Mario for Nintendo, there was Sonic for Sega. And somewhere along the line, Sonic fans started settling for, okay, it's pretty good. And pretty good became the new standard. And then, you know, oh, it's average. Average became the new standard. Like, we keep lowering the bar. And I just don't know if Shadow is the face to bring it back.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, I think. Because Shadow has, I think fans are divided, you know, some people like Shadow, some don't. And obviously the game has very mixed reviews, but more, you know, negative on the negative side. So to highlight Shadow the way they did at the end of the last movie and to make this the year of Shadow, is that going to rejuvenate the series or the whole concept of what Sonic stands for? I don't know. Probably not. I mean, are they going to have guns in the movie? Are they going to have Shadow wielding giant guns? I mean, that's not super kid friendly, is it? I don't know.
I am kind of interested about this symphony, though, I was reading about, like the orchestra. I think that would be kind of cool because, well, you know, like the Zelda symphony, right? Or they've had it with Mega Man 2. So, I don't know.
Okay. Well, thank you for that insight into Shadow. I feel like
I don't know how much insight it was, but
I found it, you know, interesting. But the year of something, I think, you know, the year of Luigi wasn't as Luigi focused as it could have been. And I don't know if the year of something with a game and a movie doesn't feel like a year of something. I think they need more, and I would like to see. And I'm not a Shadow fan because I've never played a game with Shadow in it. I'm not anti-Shadow. I just don't know Shadow. But if you want to win me over, maybe you need more. Like, maybe you do need to re-release Shadow the Hedgehog, the game. Maybe you do need to put out an amiibo or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you need to do something.
Oh, an amiibo would be cool. Yeah.
Well, I would definitely get that.
I know you would. Just when they say year of two, they're raising the bar. They're setting expectations. And that's the thing. Yes. Sega's at its best when with Sonic, we have low expectations, right? And then they exceed our low expectations. But now they're raising the bar, you know, announcing the year of and the year of when 30% of the year's gone by. So,
yeah. Yeah, it is odd timing as well. That's true. So I think it's slightly strange, but that's fine. Maybe it's just it's just around hyping up the movie probably and the game, really, right? That's what they're trying to do, just marketing, isn't it?
So, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, let's move on to the last piece of news, I think, which is very quickly just that there were some new titles added to the Switch Online collection recently over the last couple of weeks. Super Nintendo games were added about 2 weeks ago, and I think more recently, like this last week, there were a couple of Nintendo 64 games added. Now, I know we haven't had a chance to try these exactly, but one caught our attention, which was Wrecking Crew 98. Did you want to talk about that, Trev, since you seem to know about it a little bit?
Well, I'll talk about it insofar as I'm always happy to learn about something that wasn't on my radar. And I didn't know that Japan had a Wrecking Crew sequel. I remember the original game. It was a black box NES game. And you know, it's been re-released like on virtual console and stuff. And it was kind of a cool game. You know, it was an early appearance of Mario, but yeah, I never knew there was a sequel.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool to, you know, being a Nintendo fan to, you know, to be in the industry, so to speak, you know, writing for a Nintendo magazine and still learning something new. And not that it's a new game, right? It was out in 98, like it said, but just never caught my radar because I wasn't in that region.
Yeah, same. I did not know it existed either. So that's really cool. Like you said, I think it's neat when we get stuff that was only ever released in Japan. And both of you would love, actually, speaking of Japan, but I know you love your retro stuff, Trev, but the number of Super Nintendo systems and like Game Boy Colors and Game Boys and even Famicoms, as they're called in Japan, the old NES, right? Mm-hmm. You can buy these refurbished. There's just walls of them and all of these games. And there's so many games in Japan that I've not heard of. I'm looking at these going, wow, I just wish I could buy these. I wish I could read Japanese properly. I just can't. I'm learning, but I'm very limited. And I, you know, part of me is like, I want to buy a Super Famicom and a game just because it's there and I can't get it in Australia and it's rare and it's unique and it's special. But maybe one day, when Kirk retires to there, he can do that. He can purchase all the games. They had like all the old Final Fantasy games, you know, just anything. And some of them I don't even recognize, just like Wrecking Crew 98. There's just heaps of stuff that was released over there that we never saw the light, that never saw the light of day in, you know, the US or Australia. So yeah, you definitely would love that aspect as well. So it's cool when stuff does come to us via virtual console or whatever it is, Switch Online. But we'll give it a go. I'd like to give it a go and we'll maybe report back on that one. Do we want to move on to games that we're playing first? Next?
Yeah.
Are we skipping the Switch rumors or are we moving them to the end?
Well, normally it's at the end, but we could do it now. I don't
know. Oh, I'm sorry. I see it in front of the games we're playing. That's why I asked on the paper.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I didn't add that. So.
Okay. Sorry. I'm getting thrown off here.
Okay. It's all good. Well, let's talk about the games we're playing. And I've done Pikmin Bloom already, but the game that I'm currently reviewing is called Anomaly Agent. And I have just finished this one, actually. I've just finished playing through, like completing the game, and I really, really enjoyed it. I think this one came via you, Trev, I think, and it's a little dev team. I think they have three people. I don't know if it's pronounced Few Few or Pew Pew. It's like P-H-E-W, so it looks like Few, but is it like Pew Pew, like, you know, guns, like Pew Pew?
It's one of each, Few Pew or Pew Few.
It could be. And this is like a platformer, shooter, brawler kind of thing, an action adventure sort of game. And it's about, so the agent, the anomaly agent, he investigates anomalies, which could be like gravity or time or these kinds of things. But mostly this adventure is about time anomalies. They get stuck in this kind of loop. They have to keep reliving the same sort of section of time over and over because there's a time crystal that's been shattered for whatever reason. There's these clone robot type people who attack you, and there's good guys and bad guys. It's really well made. The story is quite compelling. The characters are quite funny and interesting. The action is really good. The pacing is terrific. The music is fantastic, I have to say. This synth wave kind of soundtrack. I think you'd dig it, Trev. I always say you, Trev, because I know you always highlight the music in games that you play. Yeah, I can hear it right now in my head. Like, I finished it 2 days ago, but I can still hear it. It's pretty memorable and catchy.
I want to say I'm glad you're covering that, because this is an older game, and some of the times, you know, our crew is small, and of course we're working on a mag too, so we don't have a lot of active reviewers necessarily at any given time. But this is actually the debut game from the in DC. I think there's like three guys. And I'm glad that we're going to give it some coverage, even if it's late, because especially if it's shaping up to be a cool game, you know, like you were saying.
Yeah, it is really cool. My only issue, I suppose, was that there was a little bit of slowdown at points. Whether that was the switches, I think it's just because it's the switch, but I did have to restart it. Oh, I didn't have to restart it, but there was one point later on in the game where there were quite a few enemies on the screen and it just became unplayable where my jumps were too slow. I restarted the game and it was fine. So I don't know whether that's like a RAM issue, like a memory kind of related thing where it just, because I'd been playing it for a couple of days and just pausing it or, you know, going to the home screen and just not playing anything else in between. I was just playing that for a couple of days. So whether it just, the Switch needed to close it and open it, do you know what I mean? I don't know. I wanted to ask you guys if you've ever come across that before, you know, in terms of games and whether restarting games refreshes, you know, like with a computer, you know, your browser's really slow. Sometimes you just have to close the browser and open it again, right? Like it sort of clears the cache or the RAM or whatever.
I don't know if I've ever played the same game for days without doing another one.
Yeah, well, maybe that was my problem, but
maybe Zelda, but I don't know.
true. Yeah, and that never had that issue. So I think there's maybe a little technical glitches that they could probably iron out. But other than that, very enjoyable game that I recommend. So Anomaly Agent is that one. Did you want to talk about some of your games, Kirk? What are you playing at the moment?
Yeah, well, the first game I want to talk about, I'm actually not playing because I finished it. The review went live this week at Pure Nintendo, but I wanted to bring it up. It's called El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron. This is a game that originally came out in 2011. I don't think it was ever released on a Nintendo device before, and it's been remastered, HD remaster for the Switch. And it really kind of caught me off guard. Like, I don't know what I was expecting when they kept making all these references at the beginning to the Old Testament. It's based on the Book of Enoch, which is not in the Old Testament. It's not a biblical chapter. It's just a text, a religious text.
Deaky, right?
Yeah, a little freaky to get. That's, I kind of wish that I mentioned that in the review that I sort of wish it was in the Old Testament. So, because that would have made for a very trippy week at Sunday school, I believe. Vacation Bible school would have been very different. The whole thing is there's this group of fallen angels. They steal some artifacts from God and they come down to live with the humans because they want to have that life. And they kind of create this hybrid race that's going to destroy the world. So the Council of Heaven, again, not something that exists in the Bible, decides that they're going to destroy the earth. And rather than let this happen, God is not a character in the game. And I think this is where the Metatron comes from. Most of the, in fact, all the dialogue really, amongst the main characters, it comes from an angel named Lucifiel, who is this very cool, you know, like black leather jacket, sort of Japanese character, talks on a phone with God. We never hear God's conversations, but then they have this guy named Enoch, who was a scribe. They brought him down and he's going to retrieve these angels and bring them back to heaven. And if we get this done, then the earth will not be destroyed. So that's basically our mission. It doesn't really take place on earth. Most of the game takes place in this tower. The visuals are just some of the most unique I've ever seen in a video game. The design is utterly fantastic. And although it's mostly just like a linear action hack and slash game along the lines of, let's say the early Beretta game. Did I say Beretta?
You mean Bayonetta?
Yeah, I meant Bayonetta, but sure, let's go back to the 70s cop shows. That makes sense because that's what this Lucifiel guy kind of looks like. He could have been a 70s cop. So most of it is that kind of action, but every now and again we go into these weird 2D environments where there's a lot of platforming and they're just, the visuals go completely off kilter from what we had before. It's just constantly changing itself up. Very interesting, a lot of fun to go through. And these generally aren't my kind of games. You know, I'm not so much into platformers and I'm not into like the hack and slash action games. But I had a lot of fun getting into this and just getting to each world each time was enjoyable just to see how crazy things were going to get. I had an easier time actually with the combat than with the platforming, but that's also because the combat's a little more forgiving in that there's a way to keep yourself alive when you die. It's copious with save points so you can try again and figure things out. The platforming is just merciless. You know, it's very hard to to get to land jumps, and you're falling into holes, and then you're going back, and there's not a lot of help going on. You just need to eventually get it done. So that can trip up some players, I think. But if it's a game that you were aware of in 2011 and never played, I do recommend giving it a shot. And I have to bring up the point. I see like a lot of people talking about how they don't want to play because they feel like it's a religious game, which to me is just absolutely bonkers. If it's a game's good, a game's good. But it's not really religious. So if for some reason that's the reason you don't want to play it, it's not like they're testifying and, you know, trying to get you to go to a Bible study. Nothing like that at all. It's just an action game that's set in a in kind of like within a religious context.
Right. Cool. You
it does sound like the type of melodrama you're into, though, Kirk, even if not the genre.
Yeah.
It, well, being an action game, they don't get quite as deep as I like to have. But yeah, it's very, we'll go with that. It has its moments. And there are a lot of characters, the other angels you meet, that develops relationships with, and they become like a, I don't mean relationships, but they become more important to the game than they may seem at first. And it does have some impactful moments throughout. The story's good. The visuals and the gameplay carry it, but the story is fine.
Cool. Sounds pretty good. Thank you, Kirk. Are you playing something else at the moment?
Yes, I just got a review key yesterday for a game that came out yesterday. And by yesterday, I mean Friday, I guess, since this isn't coming out then. For Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, Sweep the Board. This is basically Mario Party set within the Demon Slayer anime universe.
This is the one we talked about a few weeks ago. Like it was it was on some, was it the Indie Showcase or something? No, when did we see this? We saw it on some presentation.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it was, because I've known about this. I remember seeing it and thinking, like, the Demon Slayer anime, I'm not giving anything away here. This is the very beginning of the anime, if anyone has watched it, or the manga. There's a kid, good kid, Tanjiro, is out working. He comes home one day. This is set, like, not in feudal Japan, like maybe 1800s Japan. His family has been absolutely slaughtered by demons, just death and blood everywhere. His sister is the only one left alive, and she becomes a demon. Let's make a family board game out of that. The entire approach. Right. And it works. I mean, the anime certainly has its lighthearted moments. It's violent, but it's also kind of fun. I just played around this afternoon with my wife and oldest son, and we had a good time. In fact, Tierney told me that at least initially she likes it more than Mario Party.
Wow. Okay.
What?
True.
Saying something, yeah. True.
But she also said it's because so far the mini games are easier.
Oh, fair enough.
And cool. It varies. I mean, it doesn't follow the formula exactly. The way they handle the mini games is a bit different. There are boss battles in this. Daytime and nighttime play a key role in it. And you're not just collecting stars. It's not like you get a star and then you get that and you move on. But it still follows the formula of you're on a game board set up exactly like the ones in Mario Party, and you roll the dice, you move along. There are different bonuses you get as you go. You can have like double dice. You can control, slow them down. It's got a lot of the same game mechanics, but it changes up just enough where you don't feel like you're playing an exact copy.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah, I guess there aren't many Mario Party-like games out there. So.
Yeah, I, before this came along, I can't think of any that did that. But here we are.
I think there was an Animal Crossing one, maybe for the Wii U.
Oh, Amiibo Festival.
Yeah, that was one.
Yeah, that was more like a board game though than like a
didn't
have mini games per se. It was just more like a take a board game and put it into the digital realm.
True. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. I don't think there's. I can't think of anything either. Anyway. Well, it sounds like a fun one. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Can't wait to hear your full thoughts. Trev, what are you playing? LlamaSoft. What is that?
Yeah, so this is this poor game. This came out just as I was getting over COVID, and then just before I was getting ready to go away on a little anniversary trip. So it is late, but this is a continuation of, I guess they're calling it the Gold Series. It's the Digital Eclipse, sort of that interactive timeline approach that we saw with the Atari 50th and also with the Karateka Karateka one, which I reviewed both of those. And I really like the format, the Gold Master Series, that's what they're calling it. And yeah, it basically is, it keeps that same approach, takes you from Minter's early days, you know, up until the present. And you can either play the games as you go through the timeline, or you can access them separately, or you can just do the timeline in full. There's, you know, flexibility. And this intrigues me especially because he was really more so known, you know, in the UK, right? Developing for a lot of computers that I only heard of in passing, but never, you know, they weren't available in America. So it's interesting to see, you know, his style, his approach. And yeah, we're recording this. This is a Saturday, and I'm going to finish the game tonight, write up my review tomorrow, Sunday. Probably have it proof Monday, and then it'll be up Tuesday, just in time for the end of the month.
Cool. That's awesome. It looks like he's created a lot of games in his career. Jeff Minter.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And he's an interesting fellow. He's definitely one of those marches to the beat of their own drums. Mm. And you can sort of see that in the sort of, like, there was a quote, and I think I took a screenshot of it. I'll have to look it up. But, you know, basically he wanted to see himself reflected in the games he made. And I think that it actually does come through. Even with the early stuff, you know, when visuals were very primitive and technology was kind of just starting to take off as far as gaming goes. Mm-hmm. But it's another case, what I was talking to earlier, like with Wrecking Crew 98, learning about a game that I didn't have experience with because it was in another region. And a lot of his games were, like I said, on UK kind of niche computers that I never had. I knew him from like the Atari Jaguar or the Nuon. He had a tendency to link himself to unpopular hardware for whatever reason, at least in America. But yeah, there's some cool stuff in there, and I look forward to getting my belated thoughts up on the site. But
very cool.
Yeah, I love the format. What can I say? They have a winning formula, I think, for whatever game developer they go to, you know, next. I think as long as they stick with that formula and give it the attention to detail, it's going to work.
Yeah. No, that is a cool, that's a really cool way to do it, I think, you know, give you the story as well as the games and kind of merge the two together somehow.
Yeah. My only issue, and I didn't even catch this until later when I was looking at the site, this is rated M, and the only reason I can find is that he'll drop the odd F-bomb, which honestly is not at all necessary. But you know, if you're a parent and you want to show your kids some of these old games, just keep that in mind. There is some you know, cursing and whatnot.
Yeah, good point, thank you. Well, let's end the show with a little Switch 2 Rumors of the Week recap, because we haven't we haven't had a show for a couple of weeks, but there hasn't been much to recap recently, but we just read about something to do with the Joy-Cons. Who found this information? Was that Kirk?
I found this. I stumbled again on an article on Twitter, formerly known as Twitter. Yeah, and it just seems so strange to me that they're saying that the Joy-Con connections on the next version of the Switch are going to be magnetic. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, the sliding them in and they click and hold into place. I just wanted to see what everybody thought of that, because I really just hope this isn't true. I don't think this is a good idea at all.
It's odd. I hadn't even considered that aspect. And I think, you know, given every Switch game trailer starts with the Switch logo and it makes that click noise.
Yeah.
Why do they want to get rid of that? Yeah.
maybe they'll make some kind of a magnetic click. Is there like a magnetic version of that when things kind of snap into place that way?
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it, do people lose their Joy-Cons? Is it to help people not lose them or something?
Well, I wonder if it's like when you're putting the Joy-Con on and they just have that tiny little button that's kind of awkwardly in the back that you have to push when you're pulling them out.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably I end up hitting another button on the console, which isn't a big deal, but I know it's kind of, it's sometimes it's hard to get them.
True. And I think
sometimes even harder, less so on the Switch than in one of those, like the, what do you call it? When you get the plastic thing that allows you to connect the two docks or the two Joy-Con one handheld unit.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be awkward. But the thing I like about those are once you get it in, it's in and it's solid. And if I want to pick up my Switch by grabbing it from the Joy-Con, I don't need to worry about it falling off or somebody grabbing it and pulling harder on the other end that it, you know, that the Joy-Con's going to pop off. Like now, like say the MagSafe connector on the power cord on a MacBook. So again, there weren't a whole lot of details. It was just they're going to use magnets. So how strong they are, if there's a way to lock it in place once the magnet has made the connection, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. But it was something new that in all the months of rumors that we've had, I had never heard this. So
no,
I thought I'd add it to the list here.
Me neither. It's news to me. And of course, yes, as we say, listeners, these rumors are just rumors. Take them with a grain of salt. And until Nintendo announces anything, we're just speculating and having fun talking about the different ideas that are thrown around. It does seem a bit flimsy, though, doesn't it, to have Joy-Cons magnetized? Like you
the
said,
thing
if you just
is up too, and fall off. Like you're right. Like I can't imagine in the heat of like an intense game of, you know, Mario Kart where you're rounding the corner or Smash Brothers or whatever. What's going to prevent them from popping off? You're going to need a strong magnet. And do you want a strong magnet, you know, near your expensive new hardware?
Your fingers.
That too. It's like, I agree with Kirk. I hope it doesn't come to fruition. I foresee there's going to be more Joy-Con issues if they do this approach. I really do.
I agree. I think... It's a fun rumor, but hopefully not true. I just don't think it's going to be strong enough. Yeah, like you said, imagine playing Mario Kart and your Joy-Con just keeps snapping off when you're in the middle of a drift.
That'll be my excuse when I lose. My Joy-Con disconnected.
Yes.
He's already got it worked in. Excellent.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. I mean, I know some laptops and tablets have little magnets for styluses and things like that, but you can't have strong magnets near computers, right? Like, that's not good for the computer, is it? That's got to mess around with the motherboard or something, right?
It used to cause problems with the hard drives back when they were the disks. I don't know that they do anymore with zip drives or digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. I don't know.
But you're right, though, Gemma. Like, I even have an issue sometimes. Like, I have a carrying case that has a magnetic flap. And even then, I'm not in love with it because I'm like, ugh, I don't like the magnet that close to the screen. Like, you know, crazy things can happen. And especially with new hardware, you know, the first version of our hardware always has little quirks that they get revised out in later editions, you know, like Joy-Con drift or like the kickstand or, you know, dock warping, whatever the early issues were with the original Switch model. What's going to stop that from happening with Switch 2 or Switch Pro? Are there going to be issues connected to magnetic Joy-Cons disconnecting or scraping or whatever the case might be?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows, right? And I wonder if we'll still hear, you know, the rumors were that May would be the announcement. So we may not have long to wait to find out whether all these things are true or not. So I hope we do hear soon, but we'll wait and see. Until then, it's very fun to talk. Was there anything else you guys wanted to add before we close off the show for the week?
I hope everyone's enjoying the new issue that Gemma put together and that Kirk mailed out.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Kirk. Oh, that must have happened while I was away, I think. Yes. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope so.
Everyone should have their copy now. If not, storm your post office and find out. They probably got it. They took it home themselves or set it out to read on their own during their breaks.
Probably. Yeah, exactly. We'll get to work on the next issue, so look forward to hearing more about that soon. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter/X. We're on Mastodon and Blue Sky as well. If you do want to get yourself a copy of the magazine, if you're not already a subscriber, head on over to patreon.com/purenintendo and you can be in line for our next issue when that's ready. But until next week, thank you guys, thank you listeners, and game on, everybody. Bye.